Welcome to a brimful of actions before 45. A week or two ago, a website told me there are apparently 50 things that I should do before I die. Now, I don't plan on dying anytime soon. Turns out there are 5 things on that list that I can't do, which leaves a total of 45. So in this podcast series, what I will be doing is taking care of a brimful of actions before I become 45. So in this first episode, or this first proper episode, I guess, I decided to go big. I thought if I'm going to try and do this, I'm going to try and take one of the big ones off the list first of all. So in this edition, I'm going to be taking to the skies and taking a flying lesson, something I've never done before, never even thought of doing before. But why not just start with something big? Now, the flying lesson that I'm on is booked through a company called Highland Aviation, based at Inverness Airport. Their website's really, really useful, very helpful, and very easy to navigate. And if you wanted to do the same thing, you can book a lesson through them quite easily. Now, for this particular episode, what I'm going to do is I'm going to record how things go through the day. So I'm going to do a little bit of recording before I go out, try and record some stuff whilst I'm actually on the flying lesson, and also, I suppose, a post-lesson reaction as to how it went. And also, I've been very fortunate to get an interview with the pilot who's taking me out on the lesson. There's an Instagram page that I'm putting alongside this podcast. The Instagram tag is Brimful of Actions. And also a reminder, if you haven't already checked out the website so you can see what my tasks are, the website is called lifehack.org. And it's the article title is 50 Things You Should Do Before You Die. So let's take to the skies. So it's 10 a.m. on Saturday morning, and I'm 1 hour away from having my first ever flying lesson. It's for a 30-minute flight. It's not the cheapest thing in the world. I will say that. It's over £100 for the experience, but I'm really looking forward to it. You know, I've been on a couple of small planes in the past, like things like helicopters and stuff, but obviously I've never, you know, been given the chance to take the controls of the aircraft. So that's exciting and terrifying, I'm not going to lie. So we'll see how it goes. Trying not to dive bomb the plane into a mountain is going to be my biggest challenge, I suppose. And yeah, so I'm really excited. I haven't really thought about it much the last couple of weeks because obviously with work and stuff, you just kind of get caught up in that. But now that the day is finally here, it's like, oh, I'm actually going to try and do this and try not to kill myself and try. Let's do it. Let's get it done. So I'll check in once I arrive. So currently on the drive towards the base of Highland Aviation. It's 10:36. It's not too bad a day. It's mostly sunny, but it's been showering and raining, so I'm hoping that the clouds stay clear for a little bit and gives me a proper idea of the landscape around me. As I'm just driving through, I've just seen a plane just go over me, a commercial plane going to Inverness Airport. And the whole journey here, I'm not going to lie, I have had the Top Gun theme tune playing in my head for the last 20 minutes. Yeah, I've got Danger Zone flying through my head right now, which is ridiculous. I'm not going to be flying a blinking fighter jet, but I can't help it. I'm excited. It's like being a little boy again, and I'm going to try and do something a little bit different. So I'm really buzzing. This is really exciting. I don't normally get really kind of amped up about stuff, but this is going to be fun. This is going to be a lot of fun. So yeah, fingers crossed. Looks like a nice day. Sun's just starting to come out. I'm getting the sunglasses on, the aviator sunglasses on. So it's going to be a fun day.
Sorry to keep
you waiting. No bother at all.
How you doing?
Good, yeah, good. Excited. Buzzing. Excellent. Yeah,
it's happy. Not bad out today.
Looks it, yeah. Beautiful.
Yeah, and we had a couple of beautiful weeks, and then it got a bit wet. But mm-hmm. Yeah, clouds a little low, but it's pretty smooth up there.
We'll settle for this, yeah, so. Definitely.
Yeah, anywhere you particularly want to go?
I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure what the 30-minute radius covers and stuff, but I mean, yeah, just give it a rough idea. Yeah, thank you. Cheers.
So we're here. Mm-hmm. 30 minutes, probably about sort of this sort of area. So basically about halfway down Loch Ness.
That sounds lovely, yeah.
Burpert Castle, that kind of area. Give that a go for now. And if it's not too bumpy, maybe we'll sort of come back over the mountains, back to the north side of Black Isle and back to the airfield.
Oh, sounds perfect.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Got sunglasses?
I do.
Good, most important thing today.
Good, yeah.
I'll just talk to air traffic control and then we'll head on up.
Excellent, look forward to it. Oh, what a beautiful day. So this is the carriage.
This is the carriage.
Wow.
Got a tomahawk, which makes it sound far more dangerous than it is.
I was going to say, it sounds like something from Top Gun with that kind of name.
No.
Actually, a cutie though.
Not very
very common in the UK.
Really? How long have you been flying these for?
Oh, a few years now. Mm-hmm. Tomahawks, I can't remember, first started flying those, probably about 4 years now. Flying for about 15 years-ish. So we'll sit you in the captain's seat, which is this side.
Grand. It's getting exciting, this is getting real now. I just can't believe how small and compact it is in here.
This is the big one as well.
Is it? Wow. Yeah.
Some of them are you know, right next to the other person. There's no room at all to move, but this one's actually quite spacious for a two-seater, which is nice.
So we're on the runway, we're just waiting for a flight to come in. We've seen a British Airways flight taking off to Heathrow, I think.
There we go.
Excellent, let's do this. Now, at this point, my hope had been to record the audio of the flight as it was taking place. But of course, being a complete clown, I didn't think about the fact that my crappy little lapel microphone would have been able to pick up the sound of what was actually going on during the flight. I should have really thought about, could I record it over the headsets that we were using, but I didn't. So instead of this wonderful recording of me talking about the experience as I was flying through, instead, I just got about 20-odd minutes of this. Yeah, scintillating stuff, as I'm sure you can appreciate. However, I did take pictures and I did take videos, and I think they probably showcase the flight a little bit better than that horrible racket that you just heard there. What I'm going to go into now is I was lucky enough to get a chance to sit down with Sam, the pilot who took me out for the day. I'm going to talk a little bit about his career to date as a pilot, and later on I'll add in some clips of myself post-flight and how I felt and how I reacted to it. Right, first of all, thanks, Sam, for doing this. I just wanted to introduce you. So you're, Sam?
Sam Hicks.
Sam Hicks, and you're one of the pilots at Highland Aviation.
I am indeed.
First of all, thanks so much for taking me out on that flight the other day. It was just an absolute blast.
You're welcome. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed it. It was great fun. So I wanted to ask you, first of all, how did you become a pilot in the first instance? How did that start?
So I initially studied towards my private pilot's license, and that's going back a bit now. It must have been around 2005. Mm-hmm. And I just started at university, so I was pretty poor, so I couldn't fly that often. So it took me about a year and a half to get my private pilot's license. Uh-huh. It wasn't really something I could, at the time anyway, as a student, really afford to do for fun. So that's when I decided to do it commercially.
Okay.
About a year after finishing university, I did my commercial training. Mm-hmm. So that was mostly here and in the United States as well. And that whole process took about 15 to 20 months.
Right.
And then pretty much as soon as I finished my commercial training, I went on to work commercially for an airline and did that for about 4 years. Mm-hmm. And then I took a break from flying then for about 3 years. I went back to university to study. And then that's when I trained as a flight instructor. Mm-hmm. And most of my flying career was not as a flying instructor, but just as a commercial pilot. Mm-hmm. And I know I've been up here since 2018, so I've been doing this for about three and a half years now.
So do you prefer this rather than the commercial stuff?
Yeah, so generally speaking, yes. But there's elements of the sort of the larger commercial flying that's really, really enjoyable and definitely more attractive, especially the salary for starters. Mm-hmm. But it's a much more hands-on experience. I do enjoy teaching as well, which of course mm-hmm. I can never get to do flying commercially. Mm-hmm. So it's a very different experience, very different type of flying. But I probably wouldn't say one is more enjoyable than the other. They're probably equally as enjoyable, just mm-hmm. in very different ways.
What's the most enjoyable aspect of your current role? What do you enjoy most about it?
Yeah, so teaching is very rewarding in generally. You're a teacher, aren't you?
I am, yes, yeah, indeed. So yeah. I know the ups and the downs. Yeah, I know the ups
and
downs.
Yeah, exactly. So it depends who you're teaching as well.
That's true.
Teaching is generally very, very enjoyable anyway. I get to work from home. I get to work sort of reasonable hours every day, but certainly the teaching element is the most enjoyable for me. The fact that we're up in the beautiful Scottish Highlands is a a big part of why I do this. You know, if I was down south in England, I probably wouldn't be doing this job, in fact. But it's just so beautiful and lovely up here. It's absolutely superb place to fly and to teach people to fly.
So was that kind of a conscious decision of yours to take this role? Was like the Highlands, and that was the major selling point for coming up here?
Absolutely, yes, absolutely. So after I qualified as a flight instructor, I knew I wanted to come for here. Luckily, it coincided with a couple of flight instructors leaving. So it was all quite well planned. Luckily, it all worked out.
What would you say would be the biggest misconception that people would have about being a pilot in terms of it's not as great as you think it is?
So I wouldn't say there's any massive misconceptions at the private, at the recreational level. I think that there's more misconceptions when it comes into the commercial training. The market has always been fairly ruthless for commercial pilots, and I always sort of describe the market as a bit like a pendulum. It swings from having a huge demand for pilots to not having a huge demand for pilots, and it doesn't take much, unfortunately, in this industry to mean there is an excess of pilots and not enough jobs. So obviously a very good example is COVID. Prior to COVID, so 2008 recession, for example, and prior to that, on a slightly lesser extent, it would have been 9/11. So it's throughout history of aviation, this has always been an issue. So the idea of sort of simply training and then sort of walking into a job perhaps is not an accurate reflection of how it actually works these days. In terms of flying recreationally, though, I really wouldn't say there's any at all. What you experience on your trial flight, you get to experience 45 times over for your pilot's license.
I know.
And hopefully it would just become more and more enjoyable.
So how many times do you fly not to do your job? Just you think, I just want to fly today. I just want to go for a spin somewhere.
Not too many, but that's probably a reflection that I spend too long doing my job. So, so now and again I do. So when I have friends and family visiting, and occasionally with colleagues as well, I will go off for the odd jolly. It tends to be only if I have the opportunity to go somewhere new. From here, for example, up to the Shetlands, something I don't get to do for training exercises. So I'll always take advantage of any offer to go up there in my spare time.
So would that be your favourite personal route, that kind of going up that way? Given, I suppose, you've seen the obvious stuff so many times.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, either that or some of the Western Isles, Stornoway, Benbecula. But they're both equally as amazing and beautiful, really.
So if someone is to come in here as a customer, kind of taking that your own personal hat off, I suppose, what would you say would be the classic 32-1 hour flight in terms of you must see this? This is the unmissable stuff.
Yeah, so my answer would really depend on the weather. So let's say, for example, it was a lovely, beautiful, clear day with no clouds in the sky. I'd absolutely recommend going as far west as possible, because the further west you go, as you know, the mountains are just stunning, absolutely stunning. But you do need that altitude that would otherwise restrict you if there were clouds, low clouds around the place. So on an average Highland day, lots of cloud, then I would always prefer going up, for example, the east coast than heading south. I think it's absolutely stunning on the east coast as well. So for an hour's flight, that would get you at least half the way up to Wick, for example, and then back down along the coast. So that would probably be my go-to routing. Of course, I spend, as you can imagine, a lot of time going down Loch Ness.
Of course.
Which is also lovely.
It is indeed. I can testify from experience.
Yeah, so if it's not too windy, Loch Ness is absolutely fabulous. But because it's a valley, you know, if the wind picks up anything more than about 15, 20 knots, then it can get quite turbulent down there. So for that reason, I would tend to push the northeast coast, really.
Have you ever thought to yourself, I don't want to go out with this person? This could go wrong.
No, not really. In a sense, I have. If, for example, someone comes through the door and they're particularly large, for example, well, I know we're going to have issues then with the mass and balance of the aircraft. Right. So for that reason alone, it's always going to be a slightly more stressful flight, because we have to find an aircraft that's suitable. So I don't generally make judgments on people when they come through the door, but if I realise it's going to be a problem because of size, then absolutely I have that going through my mind. Trying to have to find a way around that problem somehow.
I mean, like when I was up there, and you know, you were very kind enough to take your life into your hands and give me the controls for a short while, I was taken aback by how delicate the controls were. Have you ever had an experience where someone's kind of, you know, first got the controls and just gone and just totally lost it, or you're like, whoa?
Not with me, but my colleagues certainly have.
Right.
So, yeah, we always share stories at the end of the year. But no, I haven't. So of course, I've flown people who have over controlled, who have taken too harsh a grip of the controls, and they've just sort of pushed it forward and backwards and moved it in a similar fashion as they would a steering wheel in a car, and sort of expect it to respond in the same way. But that's kind of the purpose of explaining to you how things work before you take control in the first place. So providing that's done properly and clearly, then there shouldn't really be much scope for too much of a deviation. But yes, I've had a few that have turned into a bit of a roller coaster. But, compared to my colleagues, nothing too bad.
Have you ever had one where you're like, I need to say stop, enough, just give me controls, but you have to just say no, enough's enough. I can't let you fly this anymore.
No, I don't think I have.
Right.
No, I think I've probably flown with a few people who have come to that conclusion themselves. But I'm not going to feel ill flying. So if somebody wants to fly it, even if it's reasonably badly, I will let them do it for an hour. That's absolutely fine. I recall flying with a very young child once who was absolutely loving it. And I let him fly the whole way. And his parents were struggling in the back trying not to be sick because, of course, it was a roller coaster.
I believe
that was a 2-hour flight, but
it
was a present for their son, so I let him.
They've got a grin and bear, I guess.
they let him sit in the front. So.
Tough on them.
Yeah, exactly.
So now for the post-flight reaction.
That was superb. That was so good. Yeah, okay, you've sold me. Not even trying, you've sold me.
I was going to say, it sells itself, doesn't it?
It does, my God.
Well,
that's the thing, it's like 30 minutes and you're not even having to go to, you know, you're just seeing sights that people are in the world would pay through the nose for, you know.
So I've just completed that first flight and oh my God, I can't even begin to describe how exciting and how exhilarating that was. The guy I went up with was such a nice guy, such an easygoing guy. I mean, Highland Aviation's a really small wee company. It's a small wee hut that they come out of, and they've got these small little two-seater aircrafts and four-seater aircrafts. Oh my God, that was phenomenal. I mean, first of all, the actual aircraft is so small and so compact. As he was saying up in the air, it feels almost like you're on the ocean. You know, the smallest little movement of the wind or the smallest little air current kind of gives you a little bit of a jolt, as if you were on the sea. And there's a really good description, because normally when you're on commercial flights, you don't really get a sense of the speed you're going at, the altitude or anything else. But with those small aircrafts, you get everything. You get every little bump, every little jolt, every little gust of wind. And then when you do take control of the aircraft, which was a real, real buzz for me, it's so delicate. Like even the smallest, it's like tiny little movements. It's not like steering a car or anything. Even the tiniest little twist of the controls makes such a huge difference. And another thing that surprised me about it as well is you don't actually have to keep your hand on the steering very long. You know, it kind of glides along. So you're not really having to keep your hand on the controls a lot. The plane just kind of almost flies itself. And what I found really interesting was that at times there would be a little dip or a little rise in the plane's trajectory, and it would just almost correct itself. And the views, oh my God, I'm so blessed to live in this part of the world. I mean, I've driven around places like Loch Ness, Circuit Castle, that kind of area, Doors Beach. I've seen them all before from the ground, but from that perspective, it is just unreal. It's so gorgeous. It's so beautiful. And within, you know, 20 minutes, 15, 20 minutes of taking off from here, you're just seeing views and scenes that are just unlike anything I can even describe. And, you know, you're only flying at about 1,500, 2,000 feet. And so it's close enough that you can see the outline and the detail, which obviously you wouldn't be able to see in a commercial flight. But it's so, oh my God, I'm just so excited by how good that was. It was just amazing. I'm lost for words. I'm absolutely lost for words. One of the most exciting and exhilarating things I've done in my life. No question about it. I mean, I don't even know half of this stuff's recorded. I tried to take pictures and videos while I was up there, and I probably pissed the guy off quite a bit because I kept saying, right, can I take my hand off the steering? I need to take a picture of this. And I don't think I've done it justice. And I don't think I will do it justice, because no video, no picture will really showcase how phenomenally exciting that was and how just one of the coolest things I've ever done, and worth every single penny. And I'm going to do that again. I am no doubt going to do it again. In fact, I might even get a bloody pilot's license, because to do that once was just not enough. I cannot sing the praises of that enough. It was absolutely epic in every single way. So I think you might have gathered that I quite enjoyed that that flight. I can't sing its praises enough. So I'm going to just sign off now on the last part of the interview with Sam the pilot, where I just asked him a few random questions that had nothing to do with flying whatsoever. Question number one. If you could have a choice between scoring the winning goal in the World Cup, playing in front of 60,000 people at Glastonbury, or becoming Prime Minister, which would you choose?
Oh, that's a tricky one, because I don't want to be Prime Minister, but I really dislike football. So I would have to go for being Prime Minister.
Really?
I think.
Ah.
Because I wouldn't know what I was doing.
With the other two. Actually, I've done a second question. So that would be, if you weren't doing this current job, and if money, training, talent wasn't any obstacle, what else would you love to do?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. So if it wasn't flying, I would probably look for a career in maritime, and perhaps, you know, working on a ship or something.
Mm-hmm. Have you done that before? Have you ever?
Not really. So one of my early jobs when I was at university, I worked on a few ships, just a little bit of money to go flying when I could. But I was just a steward. But I was still interested in very much in the same ways as I'm interested in flying. You know?
Yeah.
It's a very different operating environment. Working with machinery, working with people, and it's just interesting.
My third and final question, this is just purely for my own indulgence, because I want to make sure that I'm not the only weird person out there. When you're flying or driving, do you talk to yourself?
I definitely talk to myself when I'm driving.
Mm-hmm.
I tend not to talk to myself when I'm driving. Probably because I'm almost always flying with someone.
That would be weird, yeah.
And that would be weird. So I'd rather talk to them than myself.
Should maybe try that next time, see how they react.
Could do. Not even flying again. But absolutely, when I'm driving, if I don't have the radio on, then I often talk to myself, probably an unhealthily amount of the time. So, yes.
Cool. And there's one last question I was going to ask you. Basically, what I'm doing is it's like a website that I saw the other week, and it's called 50 Things You Need to Do Before You Die.
Right.
5 things I can't do because of COVID and all the rest of it, so it leaves 45.
Okay.
My next birthday is my 45th birthday.
Oh, nice.
So my objective is to get all 45 ticked off.
Okay.
This was number one.
Oh, brilliant.
So these are the ones that I'm still to do. I just want to know if you've done any of them.
Okay. Time capsule. I'm going to say yes, but I can't remember. I'm probably primary school.
Right.
But I have buried a time capsule.
Yeah, what was in it?
I can't remember, but it would have been as a group as well. So if that's like, you know, just specifically for me, then I haven't. No.
Okay.
I haven't, but I would have done one at school, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Research financial aid, yes. So I spent, when I stopped flying and went back to university, I spent 2 of those 3 years writing a family history book. So
wow.
2 volumes, about 800 pages actually.
Cracking.
And obviously no one's going to read it other than my family. but it was absolutely fascinating.
How far back did you get?
1740, I think, was the first back. At least the furthest back confirmed. It's an absolutely fascinating thing to do.
Yeah.
Even if you have quite a, I don't want to say dull, straightforward family.
Mm-hmm. Did you find any sort of weird, quirky sort of things in your head, like wow moments?
Yeah, a couple. So not many. So there's some superb military stories. They tended to be the military ones because the military records and the railway records are the best, well kept and incredibly accurate and detailed. So for interesting stories, they were the ones best to go to. So there was one chap who spent his whole life in the Navy and traveled the world, really, which was just interesting. There was another chap who, going back to the 1800s now, was in working in a signal box, and he let one of the porter kids play with the lever, and he derailed one of the carriages of the train, which was interesting. And then there's one of my cousins, also on a slightly darker note, murdered his family as well.
Nice.
When his business started to fail. So
there you go.
So there we go. That I recommend, though. Protest something. Yeah, I did quite a bit, actually, when I was at university, so a typical student. So outside House of Parliament for something that I can't even remember now. Probably connected to CND, actually.
Okay.
So I wasn't sort of a massive supporter of theirs, but when I was at university, it was their 50th anniversary. So I did end up going to Aldermaston.
The test facilities, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, part of the.
Were you particularly into it, or were you just kind of going along for the crack kind of thing?
It's a big mixture of both, really. Mm-hmm. So it was, you know, it's marking an important event. I mean, at the time, I still am, really. I was pretty against sort of renewing Trident. Mm-hmm. So that was my main sort of incentive for being there. So what have I got? Just 2 of those then? Protest, family history.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Much appreciated.
You're welcome.
Sam, you've been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for your time, and thank you so much for talking me through this stuff.
Pleasure.
And the company's Highland Aviation. They're based out at Inverness Airport, and I cannot recommend enough the work that you guys do and the experience that I had. And yeah, I'm going to be back, I think. So
brilliant.
Much appreciated.
Look forward to seeing you.
Thanks very much, man. Once again, major thanks to the staff at Highland Aviation for allowing me to take part in that activity. It was an absolute blast from start to finish, and I'm incredibly grateful that I managed to do that and take that one off the list. A reminder that alongside this podcast series, I have an Instagram page entitled Brimful of Actions, and on there I will be posting video clips, pictures, etc. to showcase the things that I've attempted to do over the next few weeks. And also the website with the ideas and the inspiration is lifehack.org. And the specific website is entitled 50 Things to Do Before You Die. So in the next episode, I'm going to take a slight detour from the original plan. I'm going to go back to try one of the ones that I had originally said I had done, but in actual fact, I thought I needed to really push myself to achieve it. So in the next episode, I will be conquering a fear. And to conquer that fear, I will be doing something I never, ever, ever, ever said I would do. I'm going to do a bungee jump.